This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
For this evening, Power Listener, who's our Power Suit? It is Ulindiwe Matlali, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Africa Teen Geeks. Sis Lindiwe, good evening and welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Sure. I'm about to sing, ne? And not to sing, I don't have vocals, but I can sing praises, ne? Power Listener, this is Lindiwe, of course, is the founder and CEO of African Teen Geeks, which is Africa's largest computer science education nonprofit. And certainly, I think, has won herself many, many, many awards. She's been top 50 most inspiring women in tech. She's also been recently appointed as one of 252 women coming out of the Dutch Consulate General in terms of looking at, champions of technology-related fields. Previously, also top 200 Mail and Guardian, top 50 visionary women in tech. I mean, Cece, I don't know, where do I stop? I mean, I can continue. Social Innovator of the Year, Ivo. Welcome to the show and thank you for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
Sure. You know, and it's, you know, as I said, when I introduced the conversations, is that for us, this is an opportunity for us to get to know you, one, through your work, because I always say in Joburg, people like to ask, what do you do? You know, and they don't ask, who are you? And it's so nice when what do you do translates into who you are as well. Where it really, when you talk about what you do, it actually starts to give us elements of actually who you are. And so we really like to take the opportunity to get to know who you are. And so I know, for example, that, most people have got a teacher that they remember. That breathe life into them. Who was that teacher for your life?
For me, it was Mr. Mavuso. So he used to teach biology in Kailami Secondary School in Belfast. He was one of those guys who was very strict. If one person makes a mistake at the beginning of a double, period, So, but he was one of the people who really encouraged me a lot. So I think I can't, every time when I think of someone, it would be him in terms of how he made my high school experience really great. Because he really believed in me.
What do you think? And I mean, when you've had time to think about Mr. Mavuso, what do you think he saw in you that now you're starting to see in yourself?
I think he saw the potential. I grew up as an orphan, so my parents died when I was young. I was raised by my grandfather, and. When you grow up in an environment where you are one of the poorest, in a township, people don't see you. And they don't see any potential in you, even when they talk about people, kids who, the most likely to succeed, they don't include you. Mm. I remember one time I was in a car with, funny enough, our pastor and his wife, and I was talking about, I wanted to go to UCT, and at that time they were still building, the guys who work, I think now they are fall under the Department of Public Works. They do the roads and stuff.
EPWPs.
That's probably what my aspiration should be, because, for her, and it wasn't the part, it was the wife, for her, I was too poor to have big dreams. And I think that stayed with me, and I think it also drives the work that I do.
Sure.
Because many times when, children who are brilliant, if you don't come from a good family, nobody notices, nobody sees you. And that's why when I always talk to kids who come from a background like mine, who don't have, the social capital, and I'll say to them, they're so good that, make it very difficult for people to ignore you.
Sure.
And that's the only way, just be good.
And I mean, you know, talking about making it difficult to be ignored and also talking about feeling seen. And I think that's such like an important part of the developmental process of anyone, even when you're aspiring to become a CEO and you're trying to grow into the organization, there is that innate need to be to feel seen. And so, you know, I like the words that you use, that in that moment you felt seen by Mr. Mavuso. How did that translate then as you went through UCT and you continued, you know, through your education as well, as a leading theme around, you know, this disgusting excellence that can't be ignored?
Yeah, no, I mean, I work hard because one, I didn't want to let him down. But also my grandfather raised me. I didn't want to let him down. I had to finish a degree. Another thing with Mr. Mavuso, which was, as I mentioned, once you make a mistake, so I knew that also if I failed, he would tell the other kids and say, you see, she had something in her, but she messed it up. And I didn't want to be the warning also.
You're the case study.
You know, a case study to say, she had something, but yay, I don't know what was going
on. But you're taking somewhere along the way.
Exactly.
Power listener, we are in conversation with this Lindiwe Matlali, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Africa Teen Geeks. And as I said, is that it's always an opportunity for us to double click and look into all the other things as well. You know, now with the World Economic Forum, you're part of the Executive Network Edison Alliance. You've been also a member of the Racial Equity Group, currently a doctoral student at UCT, board member of Technology Innovation Agency, board member of National NAFSIS. And it's just so brilliant and so exciting to get to see this stuff. And then now we then move on to ultimately founding Teen Geeks. What was the inspiration? And I mean, you know, of course, it sounds like part of your own journey and part of your own story was the inspiration, but maybe just walk us through the genesis of it all.
I wish I can say it came in a dream, but it was accidental. You know, I was attending a program at MIT and, you know, and there was, you know, it was the beginning of the movement of girls, you know, kids learning how to code. And that was in 2014. And at that time, there was an eight-year-old who was in the media at the time. And she had just, you know, built an app and she was all over. And I started Googling, you know, what is happening at home. And, you know, I found that at that time, computer science had just been, well, IT rather, has just been introduced in school by DBE, but it was mainly taught in Model C schools. For obvious reasons, lack of teachers, lack of infrastructure, lack of, you know. And I wanted to do something, you know, for children from disadvantaged communities. And I think because of when I started, I really was, I would say there was a lot of luck, you know, that came into it. Or rather, I would say, you know, as a person who's a strong Christian, I would say, really, it was, I think, something that God wanted me to do, because as soon as I came home, I went to speak at a conference and I had just released a case study. And I met somebody who was at UNISA and he came to me and asked for my presentation. And then we started talking and I said, you know, this is what I want to do. Who is responsible for labs at UNISA? Would they be willing to allow us to bring kids on Saturdays, you know, to learn how to code? And he said to me, you know, and you know, lucky for you, I am that person. So when do you want to bring them? I was like, this weekend, you know, that was it. And he started there, bringing the kids on Saturday. Then from then, we ended up doing UNISA providing all their labs nationally, and we ended up reaching up to 100,000 kids, you know, per year. And, you know, and I also started also realize that a lot of the kids that were coming were kids that come from good homes, or rather, I wouldn't say not that if you come, if you're poor, you know, it's not a good home, but rather I would say kids who were relatively economically well off.
Sure.
And because the parents could afford to drive them to the labs. And that's when I started knocking at DBE's door. And I'm like, you know, can't we make coding a compulsory subject? And luckily, the minister welcomed me in the TG, and they said, well, we don't have money. If you can find it and create the, you know, and help us work with, you know, do the, develop the curriculum, then yeah. And that's what we did. So we actually assisted, raised the funds for DBE to develop the coding and robotics curriculum. And now it's with Malusi, and hopefully, you know, will be implemented as a compulsory subject from grade R to 9. And now we're supporting them with teacher development, and I'm knocking on people's doors to get more computers so that schools that don't have computers in townships are able to have it. But I think one thing that you didn't mention is that I always say I have two jobs. I've got one that pays my bills and one that feeds my soul. So I have my own company, and that's the one that pays my bills. And Africa Teen Geeks feed my soul. And that's because I'm so passionate about it. That's why people just see me as somebody who runs Africa Teen Geeks and not as, you know, yeah, which I'm not complaining. I'm grateful for that, because I would like to be known for what I've done for other people than my own success. And, you know,
sure. Yeah. We are in conversation today with Usisilindiwe Matlali, who is the Chief Executive Officer and founder of Africa Teen Geeks, and also the CEO and founder of Apodites. And we're going to get to know again. And so we're just getting to know her in terms of just understanding the things that have inspired the journey. And these, I guess, what is this English word? Serendipitous moments. That's the one, where, because I don't want to call it luck. It's serendipity. You know, it was there for you. It was waiting for you to be the one knocking on the doors. And I mean, we now, the kind of legacy of saying, I built the curriculum, or we built the curriculum for robotics and coding in South Africa to really breathe in a future. And, you know, as we're just, you know, when you go onto the website, Teen Geeks, it says we are dream factory. We are a dream factory. And I think, maybe just to wrap it up all in that, you know, and how this is really, I think, the place where dreams come, you know, come alive. And how does that translate into the version of your soul that comes alive the most?
Yeah, I mean, one thing, I love children. I really do. And I feel very much at home when I'm around children. I love the hope. You know, kids, they see the future is this, you know, blank canvas that they can come in, you know, and just paint their lives, right? And as we grow older, we start to know that sometimes, you know, we start singing with you sing, you know, sometimes things go right, sometimes they go wrong. And we start seeing life with those lens. When you come up with an idea, as an adult, you come up with the pros and cons. Kids don't have that. And I love to spend time with them and make sure that they don't lose that, and support the kids to give them that, because there's nothing more sad than, you know, to be around a child who's been so disappointed that they've given up. And you think about the potential that they have. And so for me, every child that we come, you know, that I come across, I want to see them. I want to know what their dreams, what is it they want to become. You know, when kids come to our program, the first thing we ask them is to do a vision board. And most of them, like the first time, right? And we just say, yes, we'll get, you know, like if I go around and ask for old magazines, then we give them and say, you know what, if you had all the money, what would you be? And you'll see a child will say, I want to be a tailor, or I want to own, you know, a Wimpy. I want to drive a truck. And that's because that's what they've been exposed to. And maybe they're in a family where nobody has a job. So any job for them is what would make their lives better. And we take them through the program. And all the kids that come with us, we see them as, you know, their potential. And that's why we don't even ask for results. For me, I don't look at the past school results, because sometimes the child hasn't done well because maybe they've never had somebody who told them you're smart. Sure. It's something as simple as that, to say you have the potential. that's what every child wants to hear, you know. So that validation that you have something to contribute. So that's what we do. And at the end of the year, we ask them to do a vision board again. You see the change, my brother. You see,
oh,
from,
brilliant,
you know, I want to drive a truck to, I want to own truck.
Oh, no.
So you see them, you know, having a big corner office. You see them saying, I'm going to party with Jay-Z. Those kind of things. And it's, you know, because obviously they love that.
Yeah.
So, and for me, that's really what's important.
Sure.
And I think it is so important that for every child that we get to spend time with, we want them to know that they are not their circumstance. If you are an orphan, that's not who you are. You're just a person who grew up without parents, and you define your future. And with the right support, and once we help them at least to have their basic met, then we know that if they don't worry about their basics, then they can dream. And
sure,
that's really what we want them to do. We want them to dream.
And I think, Sis, you may take for granted that this is breathing hope and dreams into adults as well, and not just abantu bancinci. So certainly, I think just a brilliant space that you're occupying. And then, of course, we get into the space where you crack the whip, where we make the money, you know. And Appetites, very interesting places that very interesting spaces you're playing. EdTech, I mean, if you just look at all the funding that's been coming through in terms of venture capital, private equity funding, EdTech is a big space as well. Also, virtual reality platforms. Sissy, tell us a little bit more about this.
Yeah, no, I've been a huge fan of VR for many, many years. My middle daughter loved VR more than me. She ended up speaking when she was 10 at Microsoft Business Application conference about that. So that tells you how much VR we love in the family. We had all the goggles, like all of them. We could tell you which one is better, which one doesn't work. So that for me, it also started with the potential that virtual reality can have in education, but also in exposing children, right? So what I love, for example, you know, you have that if a child has never been to America and they want to visit the Grand Canyon, you know, with the VR goggles, they feel like they are there. And as I said, for me, a big part of the work that I do is really, you know, around education and exposure. And one of the things that when I grew up, my grandfather did, you know, my grandfather went to school when I was doing grade one, because obviously he was old from that generation that he never learned how to read. So when in my school started around that time, he went back and he was learning grade one with me. So we used to sit outside and read. And one of the things he used to say to me was, if you've never been to America, we go to a library, we pick a book about America that takes us there. So he used to say to me, your imagination is what is so important. So that's why for me, even if it's my business, it aligns with what I do to expose a lot of the children, so that even if they may not visit America, they may not, you know, they can feel like they are there and use their imagination. And imagination is such a powerful tool, because, you know, if you can't see yourself, you know, in what you are seeing, you never gonna get there. So it's important that you see yourself, even when people don't see it. There's nothing more important than this. And I really instill it on every child that things in my life. I need them to know that you are your biggest cheerleader. And there's moments where there's no one who's going to tell you good. And that's the time you need to look in the mirror and say, I am smart, even when you've just failed. Because that's what will encourage you. And that's also one thing that I also do, is to teach that system. I teach with my children the importance of having a positive relationship with failure. And understanding not now doesn't mean not ever. It just means not yet. So every failure that happens just goes, you know? And sometimes when it's a no now, if you're not ready, and by the time when the opportunity comes, make sure you're ready. And that's why I will opportunity with those
Sure. I think we're struggling with Elaine Gassis Lindy. We'll try pick her up in just 1 second. And I mean, we were really, I think, just talking about also just the work that is being done at Appodites. You know, and she was talking about having a good relationship with failure, and software development is one of the things that they do. If anyone's ever had time to play with code, guys, there you have either a very good or a bad relationship with failure, because code will humble you. You'll code that thing and code it, and then when you press right, it tells you 778 errors and you don't know where to start. And so certainly, I think, as she was talking about, you know, having a positive relationship with failure, particularly looking at the fact that they also do software dev. And I said, yo, I know that experience of just having code really just give up on you. And this is just coming into, I think, you know, the work, you know, from Appodites. I mean, you're stepping into an interesting space, because, you know, you're using gamification as well, which is a growing area of corporate training and development as well, using that also in edutainment. And then, of course, I think software dev of being kind of the bedrock that is enabling you to build and design some of these.
Yeah, I mean, gamification is very important. You know, children don't learn the same, and people don't learn the same. You know, I think for me, one of the things that I've got three kids, and they are so different. My son can't handle somebody standing in front of him and telling him what he just switches off. So he does better when what he does is more interactive and more of a visual learner. It's really important. And I think, you know, that's why it's like for us, we've also, you know, the providing of mentorship and tutoring is because to help, I mean, in our education system, our teachers, especially in townships, if you're having 60 kids in your classroom, there's no way you're going to know all of them individually. And so that's why we actually, if I was able to, like, I would search for those kids who are doing that well, so that we can understand why and see how we can support them. I think that's why I really love gamification, because it just makes the subject matter fun, especially if things that a child is struggling with, and it makes a lot of difference. There's a lot of research around it, so very, very passionate about it.
And then, of course, we're going to come back to you now. And because I think you've shown us all your, not even all, you've just shown us a sliver of the elements of leadership that I think we've had the benefit to see and watch, and those who've experienced you in person also, I guess, would have something to say. So if someone had to say, this is the kind of leader that Usis Lindiwe is, what do you think they would say?
I hope it would be very arrogant of me to assume what people would say about me. We all wish to say that, I think. But I would say, you know, I hope they see that I really believe in young people.
Yeah.
And I believe in the potential. And everybody who works for me, I try to give them their space to learn, to grow, and to excel, and to lead. I am not the kind of leader who tells people what to do. I'm the kind of leader who shares the vision and allow people to do their work. Because what's the point of, you know, having the best people and still tell them what to do? So I believe that I don't know everything, and I want to learn, and from people that I work with. So it's more of a collaboration rather than, you know, me saying you're gonna have a boss. Like, I don't need the, I hope that, you know, my team sees it, you know, this is how people see.
Sure. And there you heard it, power listener. If she says she doesn't want to speak on behalf of other people, but if she was then to say, what would she wish people say? That she believes in young people. She believes in potential. She leads by giving you the space to be in the space to grow. And also, she's a learning leader. Yo,
I don't know anything else to say. I don't have anything else to say besides, won't you, Sisi? It's such beautiful work that you've been doing, and it's an absolute pleasure for us to take a moment to just walk into your shoes and see a virtual reality of your life, really getting into a VR view of your life. This is where we are. So certainly, I think for us, it's been absolute pleasure, and thank you very much for honoring us and doing the beautiful work in really, I think, breathing dreams into young South Africans, and also, I think, really playing your role in informing the future of pedagogy in South Africa, particularly, I think, on the emphasis and insistence around robotics and coding coming into the curriculum. And that power listener was Sislindiwe Matlali, who is, as I said, Africa Teen Kings chief executive and founder. She's also, of course, the founder and CEO of Apodites. And that was our power suit for today.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.